Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and that is especially helpful for people outside of our listening area. So if you have friends or family who might be interested in learning more about their financial life, you can stream live while we're doing the show or listen to podcasts that are also available at wdiy.org. I believe you just go to the tab called Local Programming and look for Your Financial Choices, and you can see the list of shows we've done and the topics and get more information, get informed. Today is January 4th, 2017. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 19,942, the NASDAQ at 5477, and the S&P at 2270. We are talking about what to do right in 2017. No New Year's resolutions from my listeners on the show. Nope, we're not going to do New Year's resolutions. We're just going to do everything right this year. New Year's resolutions, people tend to break those resolutions. So we're just not going to do them. We're just going to do everything right out of the gate. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori's in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So I started the show tonight with my normal kind of introduction, but I do want to say welcome back to myself and to everyone. I've been out for a couple weeks. It was a nice break. Coming back revived, you'd think, but no, I'm kind of like in slow-mo because when you're off for a couple weeks, you kind of relax and you get into a whole nother mode. I'm not into my frantic adrenaline rush, crazy antics. So I'm a little bit slow. We'll see how the show goes as I go on here. But I do want to say Happy New Year to everyone. Happy New Year to all of our listeners. Thank everyone again for the pledge drive that we had mid-December. Thanks for our listeners for contributing as they did. Very thankful for that and proud of this station and proud of all of our volunteers here. So thank you so much and Happy New Year. Happy New Year to WDIY and all of the folks involved here and you listeners. So thank you for being here and thank you for listening. So I thought it would be kind of fun tonight to talk about what we can do right in 2017. And I have a punch list, which of course is not all inclusive because I probably could go on and on about a number of things that we can do right. But I thought these were kind of things that came to the top of my mind. And I asked a few advisors that I work with, hey, what would you like to do right this year? And it was really interesting because I got different answers and they were enlightening and fun for me to think about talking about. So what I thought I might do, since we're at the start of the show, I think I might run down the punch list very quickly so you have an idea of the kinds of things I want to talk about tonight. grab your interest so that when you're on your ride home and you're pulling into the driveway, you wait for a break, run into the house and turn on the radio in the house so that you can catch the explanation behind some of these. So let me kind of run down some of the punch list of things to do right this year. And again, some may not apply to all of us, but I have a broad audience, so I'm going to have some that might apply to a few of you, some that might apply to another demographic. So here we go. Number one, redirect auto deposits on IRAs or Roth IRAs. Review 401k contributions at work. Review automatic 529 contributions. Set it and forget it not. I'll tell you more about what I mean by that as we go through the show. Review prior employer plans, prior employer retirement plans. I'll tell you what we want you to do with that or think about. Review insurance coverages and optional coverage. What could I be referring to there? Using a debit card versus a credit card. One might be better for some people and the other might be better for others. Number eight, check your credit scores. Number nine, sign up for My Social Security. Number 10, required minimum distributions at age 70 and a half. What do you need to know about that? A divorced spouse for spousal benefits for Social Security. That might be important for some people. Reconciling bank accounts. Reconciling bank accounts. How many of us aren't doing that? We're going to talk about what that might look like nowadays. Pay yourself first. Number 14, plan for purchases. I really liked that one, and we're going to talk a little bit more about what that means. Plan for purchases. Number 15, update estate documents. I practically say that on every show. Number 16, review beneficiary designations and contingent beneficiary designations. I probably say that on every other show. Disaster planning. Disaster planning. I have some information for you on disaster planning and from the IRS. They had some ideas and I thought that was good. And I attended a webinar this afternoon and that was one of the last slides they had mentioned. So I thought, oh, that might be worth talking about. I happen to have this information from the IRS and I happen to be at this webinar that said prepare for disaster planning. So I thought, we'll add that to our punch list. So we are going to talk about why these might be some of the things that we want to do right in 2017. Recall that this is a show about financial choices, about your financial options, and that every day we have choices that we have to make about our financial life. Those choices impact all of these different aspects of our life. I mean, it is the one thing that affects us every single day. We have cash flow. We have taxes. We have investments. We have retirement accounts. We have risk mitigation, life, you know, insurance, and we have estate planning. These are the six elements of financial planning. And when you think about those items that I just talked about, as far as what can we do right in 2017, almost all of those things I just talked about hit one of those areas, those financial planning elements, the financial elements of our life, because our decisions that we make every day impact, how we're doing. And when we talk about goals that you have for the year, when we talk about New Year's resolutions, people say, this is what I want to accomplish this year. And it might be eating better. Eating better has a financial impact. What do I mean by that? Well, when you eat better, you have better health. When you have better health, you keep your job longer or you work longer or you are able to keep your job, which provides you income to work, pay your bills, and meet other goals, such as taking that cruise or getting, funding your children's college education, buying that new house. So we have goals that we have, New Year's resolutions, and taking care of yourself financially impacts all of those resolutions that you might have. So we're going to talk about all of these that I just are punch list. If you have ideas, I'm welcome to hear those too. If you have questions, of course, I always welcome questions. I love callers' questions. We are live. You can call in. You can talk live on air or off air. If it's off air, just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. Otherwise, we'll put you through and we'll talk live. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. And I have Lori C. in the studio to answer calls if you have questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air or off air, whatever you are more comfortable with. So tonight we are talking about things to do right in 2017. One of the first things on the list was redirect auto deposits on IRAs or Roth IRAs. The reason I mentioned this is I had an advisor who came to me and said, hey, Lori, I have a client who over-contributed to their Roth IRA. They were set up for automatic deposit. Every month they were just putting in $50 a month. They set this up in 2014. They qualified to make these Roth IRA contributions. All was good. We just manage the investments. We don't do the tax returns. I didn't know what their tax return looked like. Their tax preparer apparently didn't ask them the right questions as to whether or not they were making contributions into IRA accounts. So we find out these folks make too much money for the Roth contributions. There are thresholds, and you have to be under these thresholds in order to make the contributions. So to start with, they had a great idea. Set it and forget it. And you're going to hear me talk about set it and forget it a few times tonight. But set it and forget it. You're paying yourself. You're going to hear me talk about that. They're taking care of business. They're making good decisions. They're putting money away in a Roth IRA. We love Roth IRAs. They just forgot to connect the dots that sometimes your investment decision impacts your tax consequences. And because they were over the threshold that the IRS establishes for Roth contributions, they weren't allowed to do the Roth contributions. So now what happens? That was for 2015. We are now in January of 2017. It wasn't caught during the preparation of the 2015 tax return. If you catch it timely, the IRS allows us to correct these mistakes or errors by the extension due date of the tax return. So if it had been caught by October 15th of 2016 for the 2015 tax year, they could have reversed the contributions. It's called like a recharacterization. Instead, what ends up happening is they have an excess contribution to a retirement account that they weren't entitled to make this contribution. There could be excess contributions on Roths. There could be excess contributions on traditional IRAs. Those excess, and there are cases where you can have an excess contribution in a 401k too, and that might occur when you have two employers. So you've got to watch out for that as well. If you have excess contributions in retirement accounts, the IRS requires you to remove those excess contributions timely. If you don't, you have to complete a Form 5329, and there is actually an excise tax. It's a 6% excise tax on those excess contributions until you remove them. And occasionally, if there's income on those contributions that you've made, there has to be some allocation to that income as well, and that would have to be removed. One of the wonderful things about traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs is that the IRS allows us to make those contributions up until April 15th of the year following. So if you are someone who has done this set it and forget it and put it on automatic deposit into those accounts, but now you're getting close to those thresholds, you want to watch for that. You could stop the automatic deposit into the Roth IRAs. And one of our advisors at the office, Mandy Pugliese, she's a CPA, she had suggested if you think you might not be eligible, continue an auto deposit out of your check book or out of your checking account or out of your payroll, however you do it, put it into a separate account so that even though you're not putting it into the IRA or the Roth IRA, because you're not sure if you're going to be eligible to do it, have it automatically go into a savings account. Then when you go to file your tax return, I'll give you the example of, let's say, 2016, you weren't sure if you were going to be eligible in 2016. You go to file your paperwork and you see in March of 2017, when you do your 2016 taxes, oh, gee, I could have done it. You have the money. It's in a savings account ready to go. And then you can make the contribution because you're within the AGI limitations and no problem. If you find out, whoops, I'm way over the amount, the threshold that I'm allowed to do, you don't have to reverse anything because you stopped the auto deposit into the IRA or the Roth IRA. So for those people who are kind of near those thresholds, and you may be surprised how fast you can get there when you're working and you kind of do that set it and forget it thing and several years go by, all of a sudden there might be two of you working, you got promotions, you got raises, and all of a sudden you're over the thresholds. So you want to watch for that. The Roth IRA limitations, just FYI, for 2016 for married filing joint is $184,000. And that's pretty much page one income. The bottom line on page one is the adjusted gross income limitation. Married filing joint is $184,000. So if you made more than that, you wouldn't be allowed to do those Roth contributions. If you're single, it's $117,000. And traditional IRA thresholds are lower, and it depends on if you have an employer plan. So if you have an employer retirement plan, married filing joint threshold is $98,000 if you have a covered spouse, meaning a spouse who's in a plan. If your spouse is not in a plan, the threshold is much higher. It's $184,000. And if you're single, it's $61,000. So just be aware of these thresholds. There are way too many different AGI limitations for different aspects of the tax code. I'll make your head spin if I keep talking about all of them. So just know to pay attention to these things. Another item I had mentioned is there technically could be excess contributions on a 401k. How would that happen? Normally, your employer will stop making those contributions to the 401k once you hit the max. And the max for 2016 and 2017 is $18,000 for employees. And if you're over 50, it's another six. So it's $24,000. And let's say you said 10% of my payroll and you made $300,000 and 10% would be $30,000, your employer is going to stop it. There's other limitations as well, but your employer would stop it at the maximum amount. Where you can have excess contributions in a 401k is if you change employment and perhaps maybe through the first 10 months of the year, you maxed out at employer A and the last 2 months of the year, you were at a new employer and eligible for 401k contributions and you started socking away a bunch of money there. You might actually have excess contributions for the year because it's not per employer or per plan. It's per individual for the year. You might want to watch for that. Now, if for some reason, I'm trying to think, you have to go to the employer and have them reverse it. So typically what I'll tell people is go to the new employer and have them reverse it rather than the older employer, because usually that paperwork is already done and that kind of thing. So you want to watch out for that type of issue. There are a lot of other things to watch out for on 401ks when we talk about doing things right. And I will talk about those when we come back from this next break. So we're going to talk about doing things right in 2017. And one of those items includes reviewing your 401k contributions. And I'm going to talk about what that looks like when I come back. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about doing things right in 2017. One of those things might be to review your 401k contributions at work. 401k is the Internal Revenue Code section governing employer-sponsored retirement plans, particularly to the 401k. It could be a 403b as well. Typically, 403bs we see in nonprofits, hospitals, universities, that type of thing, but very similar rules for both. What you would should be doing is reviewing your elections. You want to review how much you are contributing, how much you're electing to contribute. Is it 3%, 0%, 6%? You want to review that because maybe you haven't looked at it in a while and you don't realize you're not putting anything in. And maybe you've had some raises since then. Or your cash flow's gotten better and you could afford to put some money in. This is saving for your retirement, folks. And when you start saving, it's tax deferred in the 401k if you do the traditional 401k or 403b. Tax deferred, and then that tax deferral is growing and growing and growing. At such time when you retire, you can take that money out and pay tax on it then, and hopefully you're in a lower tax bracket. And so you're getting the benefit of the tax deferral up front. When I talk about reviewing it, you also want to review not only the percentages, but are you getting a match by an employer? Employers sometimes will match the contributions the employees put in. Sometimes they will say, we'll put in 3% of the first 3% that you put in. That's a one-for-one match. And maybe 3% of the next three, which would be like a 4.5 amount. So you want to look to make sure you're getting the employer match on your 401k, 403b. You also want to look at where you're putting that money. Are you putting it into the traditional 401k slot or a Roth 401k? Are you doing pre-tax, post-tax? I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. I have a caller, Mary Ann. Mary Ann, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
Good. How can I help you?
Well, I understand that I could actually be getting more from Social Security than I am. Okay. I have been getting my Social Security for now a number of years. I'm 72 years old. But I've learned recently that I could be claiming the Social Security from my late husband, who had a much better paying job than I.
Mm.
Is that correct?
I believe that you can go in because did he pass away?
Yes, he did.
Before you got remarried?
Yes, he did.
Okay. And you were married when he passed away?
Yes, we were.
And I think that you need to go in and check. So are you collecting on your own benefit, not your current spouse's benefit?
Correct. I mean, he's collecting on his, I'm collecting on mine, because I had a career as a teacher.
Okay. So you had a pretty good benefit to start with. But if your late husband had a better benefit than what you had, I do think you need to go in and check on that.
Okay. And is there any possibility that I could be compensated for all the years I've missed?
No. Marianne, typically I think they only go back maybe 6 months.
Okay.
So,
but going forward, it would be nice because he had an executive position with a large company.
Right. And you'll want to review that with them and certainly call. I had another case similar to this.
Okay.
I don't know if the facts are exactly the same, but I think you do have something there.
Well, this is something definitely to plan ahead for 2017.
Exactly. That's a great call. I'm so glad you called in, and people need to review that as well.
So thank you for starting the question
okay.
tonight.
Okay, great. Thanks, Marianne. Thanks for calling.
Okay,
have
bye-bye
a good
now.
Night. Bye-bye. That was a great question, and I actually think that many people kind of lose track of that and forget because they go on with their lives, and they get remarried, or as in her case, she had a good benefit to begin with. And they don't realize. Now, what I'm not sure about, which I didn't go on with Marianne, was that if when she went to collect, she might not have mentioned to them that she had a prior spouse, because normally Social Security, our local office is pretty good about helping people navigate what the best benefit is. So she may not have thought to mention that she had a former spouse, and that could be where the little hiccup came. So that is something to keep track of when you are going in and applying for Social Security, mentioning these things. Sometimes people will apply online. I'm not sure if applying online takes you through the right questions or the right flow chart of making sure that you have the right benefit. But that's why sometimes it's good to go in and talk to someone and kind of just throw it all on the table and see what happens. If Marianne had mentioned it to Social Security, the only thing I could think of, now Marianne said that her husband who had passed away had the higher benefit. The only thing I could think of is perhaps if Social Security had known that, after all, maybe possibly Marianne might have had the higher benefit. Don't know. So that's good. It's always good to check. I really appreciate that call and question. It's great, great alert. So thanks for Marianne for calling in. The phone number is 610-758-8810 if you have questions. So I'm mentioning things to do right and the 401k contributions. Review to see if you're getting the employer match. Review what you are deferring. Are you doing tax deferred? Are you doing after tax? There's no reason to do after tax contributions if your employer plan allows for Roth contributions. Although there are some highly compensated people that there may be a reason to do after tax. I forgot. I did have a case where I saw that. But if you have an option for the Roth 401k, if you're in a low tax bracket, that might be a good thing to do. You don't get the tax deferral on the Roth 401k contribution. So you really want to watch that. Maybe you're someone who was making low income a couple years ago. Your employer offered the 401k Roth option. You took it, and all of a sudden you've gotten promoted and raises. And now maybe you're married now, and now your income's really high, and you're in a high tax bracket. Well, that Roth 401k deferral might not look so good for you anymore, and you might want to revisit that. So that's what we're talking about. Revisit your percentages, revisit the nature of those contributions that you're making. Also, if you are 50 or turn 50 in 2017, you could do the catch-up contributions. And some employer plans, when you're saying, I elect to defer 6% of my pay, and maybe your 6% of your pay caps out at $18,000 because you've got a really great job. Well, your employer plan might require you to complete another election to take the catch-up contribution, and that could be up to $6,000. So you want to make sure that you're getting the benefit of the regular employee contribution and the catch-up contribution if your cash flow allows it and you have the cash flow to be able to do it, to get the full tax deferral. So look for that. I mentioned auto 529 contributions. Sometimes folks will set up contributions into an educational account called a 529. They set up monthly. They do it automatically. Well, maybe the kids are getting older. Maybe you need to review your own cash flow. Maybe you don't have the cash flow to do that anymore. But you set it up to be set it and forget it, and you kind of forgot about it. Review any auto payments for any of these items I've talked about tonight: Roth, IRA, 529 accounts, your 401k contributions. We don't totally want you to set it and forget it. We want you to set it and forget it that it's coming out of your paycheck and you're doing a great job saving. We don't want you to actually forget about managing these investments or assets that you have. And that is true of rebalancing as well. So I'm coming up on my middle break. When I come back, I'm going to talk about set it and forget it not. So we'll be back in just a minute. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 43 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Tonight, mostly clear, lows around 20. Thursday, increasing clouds, highs around 30. Thursday night, chance of snow, lows around 22. Friday, slight chance of snow continuing, highs around 31. Saturday and Sunday, sunny skies are expected with highs each day in the upper 20s. The time now is 6:31. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. We are talking about what to do right in 2017. If you have questions or comments, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. I want to go back to Marianne for a second. Had mentioned about Social Security. I also think it's important to talk about divorced spouses, and that divorced spouses may be entitled to their former spouse benefits as well if they have not remarried and they were married at least 10 years. So sometimes divorced spouses don't realize that they may be entitled to a former spouse's benefits, and they may have the option to collect that former spouse's benefit and defer their own. So I will have a show on Social Security at some point coming up. I typically like to do a nice in-depth show on Social Security, but another alert for folks with Social Security. So even divorced spouses may apply for former spouse's benefits if they were married at least 10 years and have not remarried. Now, there is a case where, let's say someone was married 12 years, divorced, married somebody else for, you know, another 12 years. It can happen. When we talk about what spousal benefit you can apply for, if I have married now my second spouse, I'm married. If I go to apply for spousal benefits, it would be on my current spouse, not that former one, because I have remarried. But now I divorced my second spouse. So now I'm divorced twice. And I was married 10 years or more to each of those spouses. I may have the right to either of those benefits, depending on, you know, when you go to apply and that type of thing. So divorced spouses, the rules are kind of all out there. That's one of the reasons why you want to make sure you keep track of your marriage certificate and your former spouse's Social Security numbers, because Social Security, I believe, will ask you to prove that at that time. So I don't want to go down the path too much talking about Social Security, but just be aware of your options and making sure you're doing things right in 2017. We were talking about redirecting auto deposits on IRAs and Roth IRAs and reviewing your 401k contributions. Set it and forget it. What I mean by that not was to review retirement accounts for rebalancing. So we like when people sign up for employer-sponsored retirement plans and do payroll withdrawal. It kind of happens automatic. You don't realize you're saving because you just get your net check in your bank each week or month or however you get paid. And it's a good way to save. You just kind of, if you don't see it, you don't spend it, right? Set it and forget it. It works for a lot of people. And that's why when I say to review your contributions, if you were someone who, when you first started working, you couldn't afford to make a contribution to your employer plan and you never change it, sometimes they just continue to roll those same elections over every year because you never made the contribution. That's why you want to review it. But you also want to review even when you have made the contributions, because you want to see, can you do more? Should you change the nature of those contributions that you're making? But also you want to review the investment account itself, because the retirement account itself, you have investment options. You want to check to see if those investment options that you selected 20 years ago still might apply to your risk tolerance. You might not have ever rebalanced that account. That is something you want to do periodically, rebalance your investments, because when you rebalance, you're actually selling high and buying low. And in a retirement account, there's no tax consequences of doing that until you eventually take out distributions out of the account. There are no tax consequences in your retirement accounts when you're making adjustments, buying and selling, rebalancing. So you want to pay attention to that. And that helps keep you within your own risk tolerance. So set it and forget it, the contributions, but don't set it and forget it about reviewing the percentages you're doing, the kinds you're doing, and what the investments look like. Review those. Speaking of that, what happens quite often, people will have former retirement plans, retirement plans at former employers. They leave, they quit, they terminate, they retire, or they move on to another job, and they kind of just let those retirement accounts sit at that former employer. Maybe you open the envelopes, maybe you don't. Maybe it's okay that you didn't open the envelopes. Maybe you never rebalanced and, you know, the account did quite well. But there are times where if you've not visited it, not paid attention to those former employer plans, you might be missing the boat on rebalancing. You might be missing the boat on changes in your risk tolerance. You might be paying higher costs than you realize because you're not paying attention and not looking at it. Or funds have changed and you never updated the new options, and the default option might be cash. So you're not making any money on those former retirement account, former employer retirement plans. So you want to review 2017, something to do right. If you have old retirement plans, old employer plans where you still have assets, review those. Look to see if they still work for you. Do they not? What are the costs? And does it make sense for you to roll them over? You may be able to roll them over to a new employer plan. You may be able to roll them over to a self-directed IRA and have different options there. So something to think about. Review insurance coverages and optional coverage. What do I mean by that? You want to review your insurance coverage for your homeowners, your cars, your life insurance, and the optional insurance that might come along with things such as your homeowners, sewer backup, sinkhole coverage, earthquake coverage. We know that we just had a few houses that were subject to a sinkhole right here in Bethlehem recently. You won't think it could happen, but it can happen. We've seen it in Allentown. We've seen it in Bethlehem. Review your coverage to see if you have sinkhole coverage. It is devastating if you end up being a victim of sinkhole coverage and you don't have that insurance. The consequences are devastating. It is not exorbitant. It depends on the value of your home. You might want to check with your insurance agent about these optional coverages and whether they apply to you and whether it makes sense depending on what area of the in what area you are living. When we talk about homeowners, are you still have the proper coverage for the value of your home? Have you done improvements over the years, or has it declined in value because you want replacement value on your home? And if you have done major improvements and never told your insurance agent, you may not have adequate coverage. And the insurance companies don't necessarily cover, if something happens, that full replacement value if you weren't insured for the proper amount. Same thing with cars. Maybe you have an old car that you still have covered for collision and you just love that baby. That thing just keeps going on. You named it, you know,
Sammy and you drive all over and put on the great music. Well, Sammy's from 1999, and if you were in an accident, you wouldn't get anything for the car, but you still have collision on it. You want to review those kinds of things. So review your insurance coverages and your optional coverage. Optional coverage could also include special jewelry that you might have. Maybe you have, you know, nice rings or musical instruments, paintings, certain things in your home that might need an appraisal, but could be covered then by insurance. Also, whether or not you need umbrella policy. So review your insurance coverage. This can be fun, you guys. If you just tell yourself it's all fun, it will be fun. And you will be so much better next year when we're talking about these things. You won't have to listen to the show because you'll say, checked it off, did it all. This is where you can tell I've been on vacation for a couple of weeks. I'm a little slap happy. How about using a debit card versus a credit card? We had a nice little conversation about this afternoon. One of the advisors uses debit card for almost everything, and I use credit card for almost everything. And what is the difference? Well, he likes the debit card because he said, you know, you're not overspending. He keeps track of it. He watches in his bank account. He can see what the expenses were. And my case was, well, with the credit card, I get 1.5% to 2% back on my purchases. And the credit card offers certain protections. And he felt that the debit card also offered him certain protections. But from a show I had done some time ago, the debit card, what I recall was, it will give you certain protections if you see unusual activity or fraudulent activity within a certain period of time. Whereas the credit card, I know there are times where we might not look at our activity or statement for, you know, a month, and we still have recourse, where I am not sure you always get that with the debit card. So you want to understand that. The other caution with the debit card is, if it's attached to your bank account and someone gets your debit card and starts using it, they could tap out your whole bank account. Whereas the credit card, again, offers certain protections. You wouldn't want someone to tap out your bank account right when you were going to make that very special purchase that you plan to make for $5,000, and now there's no money in the bank. Yeah, maybe there might be some recourse with the debit card company, but you might not have that money for a while until they investigate and find out what occurred. All right. Why one card might be better for someone than another? If you are someone who can't control yourself and you spend, but don't actually pay cash because you're using a credit card and don't pay off your credit card, then maybe a credit card is not the thing for you. So even with my little cautionary tales about the differences between debit cards and credit cards, if you're someone who can't control yourself, I personally pay off our credit card every single month. So if you're someone who can't pay off your credit card, and it could put you into a snowball to an avalanche kind of situation, then the debit card might be the better option for you, because it's going to limit you as to how much you can spend. So make your decision to do it right in 2017 and do what's better for you. Checking credit scores is also something that's always available to us free of charge through Equifax, TransUnion, or Experian, I think it's called. Yeah. So you can check your credit scores through those services. And because you could get one free from each of those providers throughout the year, it might be a good idea to do one, let's say, in February, one maybe in August, and one in December, and watch the activity. When I had checked a couple that I had, I printed them out and then went and signed up for my next Do It Right in 2017, which was, I signed up for my Social Security account. And they ask you such specific questions when you're setting up your account at the Social Security Administration, ssa.gov, setting up my account. I think it's called My Social Security. I used those credit reports to help me with the information that I needed to answer, because it will ask you what credit card you might have had, and it could have been from 10 years ago, or what credit card have you never had, or what credit card do you have out of this list. So you'll get lots of good information off of your credit report, and then you can have that information available to set up my Social Security account as well. Folks, the show is moving pretty fast. I have several more items to go through. We have 15 minutes left of the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll take our last break and be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000. WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you're listening to Your Financial Choices. Marianne, if you're still listening, I quickly looked this up. If you do apply for survivor benefits, you do have to go, or widow's benefits, you do have to go into the office to apply for that. You can't do it online. I'm not sure how you originally did it. But one of the other questions they're going to ask is if perhaps you didn't think about your past spouse's benefits, is they're going to ask, did you remarry after you reached age 60? So if your widow or widower remarries after they reach age 60, the remarriage will not affect their eligibility for survivor's benefits. So, Marianne, if you remarried after age 60, you should still be able to apply for those widow benefits if they're higher. So that might have been the issue. Again, typically, I would expect if someone goes into Social Security and meets with someone, those questions would usually go up, and hopefully they take you through the proper questions. It's kind of those one-offs where if someone applied online, they might wouldn't have caught it, or if you didn't think you might have even been eligible, you might not have mentioned it. Not sure how that works in the Social Security records if you go in, if they have it in their system already, or if you have to provide it. So if you were remarried after age 60, then yes, you would apply. So if you remarried before that, then you would not be eligible, I believe, for those survivor benefits. Now, they do mention age 50 if disabled, so there might always be exceptions. I still think it's worth going in and asking and talking to someone about it just in case. All right, folks, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about doing it right in 2017. No New Year's resolutions here. We're just going to do it right. Let's be action-oriented. Reconciling bank accounts. We had lots of chuckles over this one. So reconciling bank accounts, something that probably half the people don't do. There are the old traditional reconciling your checkbook. There you write your checkbook, you know, your check number and your who you paid and the amount and your little check register. And then there are people who do online banking. So in balancing the checkbook, you might actually be balancing a checkbook all with paper, but then there are those people who are doing everything online. So reconciling bank accounts is a good way to alert yourself to unusual activity or being aware of how much you're spending and knowing what your bank balances are. If you're doing it online, what one of my coworkers had suggested was they may not be balancing their checkbook, but they're very aware of how much they're spending and they're watching everything they spend, because if they write a check, they go and look for it or use their debit card. They're monitoring their online banking every day. So they know what their bank balances are because they're monitoring it every day and checking it. And there is not necessarily any unusual activity because they're on top of it. Now, another advisor that I was talking with, he mentioned the debit card, and he also monitors that activity immediately. And he saw that there was a double charge on a recent transaction that he had. And he knew at the time in the restaurant, the server brought him two receipts, one his actual receipt and the second one for him to sign for the credit card payment. And the one for him to sign for the credit card payment was $40 less. And he's so honest, he said to the server, "I'm sorry, this bill that you've asked me to sign is not mine. It must be someone else's. Mine is this higher one." The server quickly goes and updates the bill, brings it to him to sign. He signs off on the bill that was higher, $40 higher. He goes home. He checks his debit balance, or maybe it was, I think he did it on debit card. And when he went and looked to see what the transaction was that went through, it ended up being both transactions. So if you are going to do debit transactions, online banking, what a great resource to be able to go and check it daily and monitor it that way. So whether you're reconciling your bank account on paper or reconciling your bank account by monitoring your transactions live in the moment, you're aware of what you're spending. You're watching what you're spending. You're paying attention. And remember, people who pay attention to how much they spend are the ones who have the money. Pay yourself first. This was also a great one. This was Tim Roof, who I work closely with, had said in two phases. First, he said, plan for purchases. When I asked for ideas for 2017, how do we do it right? He said, number one, plan for purchases. I said, oh, I like that. Plan for purchases. What do you mean by that? He said, well, in planning for purchases, your first thing you want to do to know how much you have to spend on those purchases is you have to pay yourself first. And I'm like, interesting. He said, pay yourself first. And only then, after you have paid yourself first and taken care of the necessary expenses, do you know how much money is available for planned purchases through those purchases that you might have later on in the year. You don't know how much you have to spend until you have taken care of your obligations first. And that first obligation is to make sure you pay yourself first through those savings, through retirement contributions. Get that taken care of, and then your non-discretionary expenses. And let's say you want a new car. You plan for it. You're proactive. You make better decisions when you can be proactive. Resist those impulses. Resist impulse buying. Planning. Be proactive. All right? So pay yourself first. Plan for purchases. Update estate documents. Of course, that's the one I always talk about. Estate documents, wills, power of attorney, health directives, living wills, all have different names so often these days. So estate planning documents is what I call them. One big bundle. And typically when you go to an attorney, they're going to help you take care of that big bundle. Along with that is you're going to want to make sure that you're looking at your beneficiary designations. So we were talking about retirement accounts. Retirement accounts have beneficiary designations. Life insurance has beneficiary designations. Annuities have beneficiary designations. The big important thing here is to make sure that you coordinate your estate planning with the beneficiary designations. Over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, people think their will is what's going to happen. So if in my will I say everything to my spouse, if not my spouse, everything to my children, and my retirement account says everything to my spouse and nothing else, you know, I didn't think about a contingent beneficiary. It says to my spouse, if my spouse and I both die in an accident, then my IRA account is not going to go to my children. It'll go to my estate. Now, you say, but Lori, your will says, but to my children. Well, yeah, but it's still going to go to my estate first. And if an IRA is payable to an estate, it accelerates the taxation of it. It doesn't work like how you think, where you can set up beneficiary IRAs for each of the kids. So you want to be very careful when you're talking about updating your estate planning documents and reviewing your beneficiary designations. As far as I'm concerned, it's not just primary designations ever. It's always both primary and contingent. You have to look at, if something happens to my primary, who is next in line? Why that is important is because it's not just in case my primary dies, it's in case my primary doesn't want it. Estate planning has a great tool called disclaimers, and a primary beneficiary can say, I don't want it. I'm going to disclaim it. And if I disclaim it, who would Lori have wanted to get it after me? So the contingent beneficiaries can step in to where the primaries were. It's a great estate planning tool. Very important to review your estate planning documents with your attorney, your beneficiary designations, primary and contingent, not just in case there's simultaneous death of yourself and the primary beneficiary, but also to allow further estate planning techniques to be used called disclaimers. I've used it several times with clients. It's great. It helps pass down some retirement monies to the children where they've had lower tax brackets or zero tax, and the mom didn't need the money. It has worked out very well. Last thing I'm going to talk about, I have a couple minutes here, is disaster planning. Make sure you have electronic copies of important tax information. And disaster planning really could go hand in hand with having your insurance reviewed as well. When we talk about disaster planning, make sure you have that sinkhole coverage if you live in one of the areas that has sinkholes or earthquakes or flood damage or whatever it might be. So, but at the same time, if your house ends up going into a hole and you have all your tax forms in the basement and they're now crushed, smushed, and, you know, flooded with water, never to be recovered again because we can't find the bottom of the sinkhole, then you want to make sure that you've had copies kept electronically. There might be other reasons you want to keep things electronically. Maybe you're in a marriage that isn't going the right direction and they kick you out of the house and you can't get the documents that you would have had in that drawer, but now you can't get into the house. And if you had access maybe on a secure portal somewhere where you can have electronic documents saved securely, you would have been able to maybe tap those. So lots of reasons why you want to do disaster planning. The IRS also had a bulletin that they sent out on December 6th called Tax Preparedness Series, Tax Records, What to Keep. And the IRS recommends keeping copies of tax returns and supporting documents at least 3 years. I always say longer. Some documents should be kept up to 7 years in case a taxpayer needs to file an amended return or if questions arise. Well, what they're not saying is in case questions arise from the IRS, because if they audit you and they say there's negligence or fraudulence, they can go back even further. And also what we have seen sometimes is if they're questioning, let's say, a capital loss carryover that you might have, and maybe that capital loss carryover started 20 years ago, they might want proof of that original loss from 20 years ago, because you can carry capital losses over indefinitely. So you want to make sure you retain records pertinent to your own situation, not necessarily what we sit and say on radio shows or TV shows. Oh, keep it 3 years and you're good to go. No, understand what applies to your own situation, but especially make sure you have electronic copies. Also, if you are someone who's going to electronically file on your own this year, and maybe in the past you use someone else or use paper copies, if you're going to electronic filing, the IRS is going to authenticate and protect taxpayers' identities this year. So beginning in 2017, some taxpayers who e-file will need to enter either the prior year adjusted gross income or the prior year self-select PIN and date of birth. So another reason why this year you're going to do it right and you're going to keep copies of everything electronic and do all those other things we talked about on the punch list. Folks, I had fun tonight. I hope listeners learned a few things tonight here and there. And next week, I'm going to talk about beneficiaries, financial implications of being a beneficiary. I thought we haven't talked about something like that. And a lot of people end up being beneficiaries these days, and they have a lot of questions and don't understand what's going to happen to them tax-wise or what they should do with certain accounts. So we're going to talk about a lot of different implications that can apply to a beneficiary. I want to thank Lori for being here tonight, Jeff for being here tonight, Marianne, thanks for calling in. Listeners, thanks for listening. And we have coming up next, Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want you to remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.